Anyways, but yeah, and you didn't grow up that way? Did you grow up on the water?
I did, but not so much on boats or, yeah, voyaging canoes, mostly just from shore, fishing, diving, surfing,
what?
Throwing net, paddling canoe. Yeah, not until I started going in Hohulea did I start sailing.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up on Oahu, in Kalama Valley. I grew up at Sandy Beach. That's where I learned how to surf and swim and about the ocean. That whole east side of Oahu, where I learned to dive and fish, paddle canoe. But it wasn't until I started sailing with Uncle Bruce that we started going out into the open ocean.
See you later, Ma.
Yeah. He's the best.
Yeah, that's great. So how did you meet him?
Actually, I knew my family and knew his family for a while. My older brother played soccer with his son, his oldest child, and I think from the time I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, we knew him. My family knew him.
Are you coming with us?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good.
I think Dwayne's coming too, huh?
He's on the phone right now.
I think he said, it didn't sound like he wanted to come.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Kai is coming? Kai, you coming, huh? Kai?
So,
maybe sleeping.
It's going to be hard for me to mic more than just Kaleo. So, is it okay with you if I just ask him questions and he answers, or?
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah,
I don't want to exclude you, guys want to meet us up there? Conversation, yeah. That's all.
Okay.
But, I'm sorry, tell me your name.
Matahi.
Matahi, I'm Stephanie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I just got
Stephanie, did you write articles on Pacific voyages or canoes or not?
I don't know.
No.
Oh, okay.
I did a radio piece about
the stars and talk
about the voyaging canoes.
I'm not sure how long
we'll
be there,
because it faces.
I think if you
familiar.
Just go that way,
oh, yeah.
The way we came in, and just
yeah,
keep
no,
walking
it's
down.
Been a while since I lived in Hawaii. I moved
yeah, you
in
get to that
pool,
and then you just walk up the trail.
But I used to
be, like,
live
right
on
the top.
Island, and I paddled there. And, yeah.
Oh, that's probably where I saw you.
Were you from the Big Island?
I studied there 2 years in Hilo, UH Hilo, and I was paddling with Kamehameha.
Oh yeah.
Hilo, yeah.
What years was that?
2001 and 2.
Oh, really? Maybe I paddled 2001. No, I left. I left in the spring of 2001.
Okay.
Yeah, I was already gone. I don't know. I just have one of those faces, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. You got a bunch of stuff there. You're going to bring
it. It's just my notebook and
so you're like a student.
Matai is ready to camp out up there.
Yeah.
Well, just to see it, I'm pretty sure there's dew up there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, could be. There's benches, though, too, you know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's a couple of places where there's benches. Cool. Anyways, you'll see. It's very civilized.
This guy's like the head guy in
Tahiti. Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
He's the main guy. He was the president of their voyaging society.
Oh, Tahiti, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. So you're from Tahiti?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You're not from Big Island. You're from
no.
Tahiti. Oh, wow. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And you guys built a canoe?
No. Our canoe was built in Auckland, in New Zealand, in 2009.
It's like Hikianalia.
Yeah.
You saw Hikianalia?
Yeah, I've heard about it. Oh, Hikianalia is the other one that's out voyaging.
Yeah,
right,
so it's the same as Fa'afaiti, their canoe.
Wow. Well, it's an honor to meet you.
Yeah, same ways.
Yeah, wow.
But we're young, yeah? We just started in 2009, so got a lot to learn.
That's good, though. I mean, you got years. I mean, you have so much.
We got the right
years
connections
to accumulate it.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, these guys I met in the Solomons—they're young. I mean, there's some older guys, but yeah, they're your age.
Solomon Island. Which island?
Tomoko.
Tomoko.
Yeah, in the far.
Oh, the Tomoko project.
Yeah,
right.
Vaka Tomoko.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I followed that on Facebook or internet. I was following it.
Yeah.
Some guys
back
home too are talking about that.
It's pretty. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
Cool. Yeah, I wish that they could join up with PBS, actually, because I think you guys could all learn a lot.
Share a lot.
Because
a canoe, Fa'afaiti stopped in Reynolds Island, and because we went to the Solomon 3 years ago.
Oh, Reynolds. Okay,
yeah.
Sort of northeast of Te Motu province. I know where Reynolds is.
But
yeah.
Not in Reynolds. I forgot the name of the place. We also went, probably in Santa Cruz Island.
Well,
somewhere.
Santa Cruz, that's like the main island for Te Motu province.
Okay.
Santa Cruz, sometimes they call it Lata.
Lata.
It's sort of the big island for that region, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And anyway, they actually witnessed as the guys working on a Tomokova.
Oh, you did?
Using, I wasn't there, but our photographer, he took pictures and notes.
Nice.
And it's all natural. And how they seal their ba'a. Wow. Like they use a nut called puke. No, puke. The puke, it's like a nut, yeah. And they use that.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
They use all natural stuff. Well, they also use like limu. And
limu, yeah.
Limu mixed with lime from a fire. Wow. And that's how they seal all of the... cracks in the
wood. Wow, that's awesome.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. There's just so much knowledge.
Yeah, and all the ropes are made out of coconuts in it.
Wow.
And the
sail is just lahala, yeah?
Yeah, what? Super, super fine lahala.
That is, yeah.
Like a cloth.
I thought the Tongan made the finest pe'we, you know? Yeah. Nah, these guys just way...
Yeah, it's the women that make it.
Because you never saw the good Hawaiian stuff.
Oh, no, I mean, this is the style. I'm not talking about quality. It's just, you know, how they do it is so fine.
Yeah.
Even the Tongan guys who are sailing, you know, we were amazed at the work.
Yeah.
The Reno and Bellona Island, they were at the Festival of Art.
Oh,
so
right.
So they came and showed their art, yeah? Oh, it's amazing, man. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it takes time.
So we got, you know, they have, like, those tradition, I guess, really still there.
It's true. It's just a matter of picking up all the shards, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Reno people, they have a language that's pretty close to our language.
Oh, yeah?
It's like it's closer to Tahitian and probably Hawaiian than it is to Samoan. You know how Samoan is pretty... Tongan Samoan is really...
They
these
have a
guys...
kind of language, these guys, Samoan and Tongan.
They do.
Their makeup of their language, they have similar words, but their grammatics are... are different.
With the Reno people, like, we could actually understand pretty much stuff that we were seeing.
Yeah, interesting.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, you guys came off the same canoe. Wow.
Tongan, they have like 20 something different pronouns, and they put like their inflections on pronouns instead of Hawaiian and Tahitian, where we put the like tense markers on our verbs. They put it on their pronouns. And the makeup of their language is pretty
Samoan.
Different than Samoan and Tongan.
They have the Ali'i language and the commoners language, so it's, wow. Anyway, it's pretty interesting.
So should we walk down there?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, Kai is going to come up, yeah?
They can meet us. I think he's waiting for Dwayne.
Yeah.
Hi there.
Hi.
Can I convince you to not bring the drop cloth? Just because it's going to make noise.
Noise?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can go
sit, you know, somewhere else.
No. I don't want you to go sit somewhere else. I don't want you to feel like I'm being hostile.
No. I'll let you guys do. I know. I'm a journalist, so I know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to do the best possible.
Yeah.
No, it's just the sound of the drop cloth.
Yeah. No,
okay.
No. I won't make any sound. I mean, no.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, and if you want to actually... I can do this. I'm so sorry. I don't have the right kind of mics. If I had the kind of mics I could put on your clip-on.
No, no problem.
But I don't. So I have to swing this thing like this.
Yeah.
And so if you want to, if I'm in the middle, if you want to talk, then I can swing back and forth like this.
Okay.
You'll be in the middle.
Oh, okay.
Okay. If we can do that on the path, I don't know, but we can try. No, you don't have to be quiet.
Talk to this guy.
So you're sort of learning then.
Yes.
Okay.
We're all learning. So much to learn. Maybe Uncle Bruce, he's like the main guy, master's pole navigator. Even him says he has a lot to learn. Us just starting out, yeah, too much to learn. So much.
Yeah, well, just think how much more you know than I do. So, I'm like a little baby. I don't know anything.
You couldn't convince the Gershon guys to come?
It turns out they just ran into this old friend.
Oh, yeah, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, so they haven't... It was like this huge reunion, and so that was really important for them. I understand how that goes.
No clouds.
Yeah, although the wind died down.
Yeah. go up that way?
Yes, we can, I think. No, we can't. No, we can't. I was lying. This is it. So you speak French, too?
Yes.
I can hear the accent.
Yeah.
What else do you speak? Zimbabwe. French, Tahitian, English, and Hawaiian.
That's all? So how's your Hawaiian, Kaleo?
Good.
Do you go to Hawaiian school?
I didn't go to the immersion school, no. No.
Did you ever study it, like in university? Or?
Yeah, yeah. I'm close to completing my MA in Hawaiian language.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Good for you.
Manoa? Manoa, yeah. Actually, I finished all my classes 8 years ago in the MA program. I just didn't finish my paper.
You finished them 8 years? How old are you?
33.
Well, I would have guessed you were in your 20s.
thank you. 33 now. Yeah, I got my bachelor's degree in Hawaiian language and Hawaiian studies. And then when they created the Hawaiian language master's program, then I enrolled in that and really interested in the classes, took all the classes, and came time to for my paper. I haven't written it yet.
Oh.
Yeah. So I didn't get my degree yet. Hope I'll get it soon. Let me try to use this voyage as, you know, writing about it and thinking critically about navigation in terms of language that surrounds it and the transmission of knowledge from Mao to Nainoa to Uncle Bruce, passing it down to our generation as part of my MA thesis.
That's more than a part. That's like five MAs, don't you think? You have to narrow it down a little.
Yeah.
Find yourself a little sliver of all of that.
Yeah, so yeah, but my Wahine speaks Hawaiian too. She works for the Hawaiian language program at UH Manoa, creating curriculum for the department and for Hawaiian immersion schools. Really good people that I'm surrounded with that also speak Hawaiian really well. Yeah. So you're in Hawaii for a little while.
Yeah, 9 years.
9 years, yeah.
So, 92
yeah.
to 2001.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so not much people speak Hawaiian, so it's a big, it's a big deal for people.
It is a big deal.
And to speak Hawaiian and bringing the language back, and it's constantly growing, and more people are speaking Hawaiian these days, and was once on the brink of extinction. But now, with the immersion schools and the creation of the Hawaiian language program at UH, more and more people speak Hawaiian and are growing up and having kids and raising their kids in Hawaiian language and constantly growing every day, every year, every generation.
I think it's amazing. Okay, so we're going to go on the other side of that little fence.
Okay. Probably similar to Tahitian, yeah? Not much. Tahitian is being spoken these days, yeah?
According to a study, it's actually picking up, but
awesome.
Only the younger generation. So there's an in-between generation that doesn't speak it.
Yeah.
Just understand.
Well, so what age is that generation?
30, just my generation, 30 years old. And it's picking back up again, but see the young people, the babies and kids, they need that transition, so there's a gap between grandparents and the kids now. And if we're not cautious, our kids will end up learning Tahitian only at school. And it's not the same.
Yeah.
It's not the same. It's like academic, yeah? So people my age, sometimes they just don't make the effort of speaking it. We understand it, a lot of them, but I guess we're kind of scared to make mistakes, so we don't just, we can't, blocked.
Yeah. That's good, but your grandparents' generation, still a lot of them speak.
Well,
and in Tahitian, okay. Yeah, some only speak Tahitian.
Some people,
in
yeah.
Some communities.
Like district, rural areas and islands far away from town, they speak Tahitian, yeah. Or their own dialects. There's yeah. five different languages there.
Is Tahitian kind of taking over for other?
It is actually.
Like in
Tuamotu's. New colonization, yeah? Yeah, it is.
Taking over from what?
They actually, Tahitian is spoken by the majority of people. So the Marquesian languages, the Paumotu languages, influenced by all this. Some of the dialects, they borrow Tahitian words instead of using their own.
What about in places like Rurutu and...
Rurutu, same.
Tubuai.
Yeah.
So like French Polynesia, pretty much, is now becoming French and Tahitian.
Yeah, but really, we're making sure that it's not going to be the case.
What do you mean?
The scholars and the people at working for the language academies are publishing more and more written documents. So people actually know this word belongs to this dialect and vice versa.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. Yeah.
So
Havikea.
I heard that on this island at night, this is where the shearwaters nest, and if you come up at night, you'd hear them, but I guess they're not nesting now.
The shear what?
Shearwaters.
Okay, what is that?
They're ocean...
birds?
They're ocean birds. They're not as ocean-going as albatross, but mostly ocean.
Oh, big ones.
Yeah, not as big as albatross either. They're like frigate birds, you know?
Okay.
Different, they look different, but same kind of habits.
The shear waters. We call them Ua'ukani in Hawaii.
What do you call them?
Ua'ukani in Hawaiian. That's her name. Sound like cats. At night, making their noises.
Somebody coming our way?
Yeah.
So there's a spot not too far from here where we can stop.
Awesome.
Hello. Yeah. Hello.
Crazy down there.
Sydney's a huge city.
Huge city.
Oh my gosh.
Lots of people, lots of buildings.
Yeah, I can't see the stars too well.
Yeah, over here it's like slow pace. It seems. Yeah, nice trees around,
nice
not much people.
Spot. It's like a little secret place. It's
yeah.
So,
is this cool?
Yeah. But there's also another spot that like is dropped down below the cliff.
Oh yeah, we saw that when we were sailing in. Up to you.
So now it's up to you. You're the teacher. I am just a student. I'm just going to use your light for a sec. See how my levels are. We're good.
Up there is probably good then. Look at this. Shearwater burrows. Right there, what you're looking for. over.
Okay, I'm just gonna put my bag down. Okay. So, say I wanted to learn how to become a navigator, but I didn't know nothing.
Okay.
And we came up on this hill, and what would be the first thing that you would tell me about?
I'd say south is that way. And you can tell because of the Southern Cross there. It's up there right above those two bright stars, which in Hawaiian we call Kamelemua and Kamelehope. In English, it's Alpha and Beta Centauri. And it kind of points to that cross right above there. And that cross, if you follow the top star, which right now is the star on the left, and the bottom star, which is the star on the right, and you make a line from the top star through the bottom star, it points down to the right there, down to the right. And that's the South Celestial Pole. And so if you can see that, you know where south is. Based off of that, in Hawaii, the sky is very different. So all of this South Celestial Pole is way down low because we're in the North Hemisphere. And one way we can tell our latitude while we're sailing is by the Southern Cross. So the top star to the bottom star is equal to the bottom star to the horizon when the Southern Cross is standing straight up and it's at its highest point. That's the latitude of Hawaii. So that's a very good constellation to know.
Wait, say that all again. Say the last part again.
The Southern Cross, so the top star and the bottom star in the latitude of Hawaii, the same distance from the top star to the bottom star is the same distance from the bottom star to the horizon. And that's how you know that you're in the latitude of Hawaii. So as we're voyaging, you can't tell longitude. You can only tell latitude. So if you were to sail, say, from Tahiti to Hawaii, you keep sailing north until you use stars like this Southern Cross that tells you you're in the latitude of Hawaii. And that's how you know how far north you are. Here down south, it's so high, and the Southern Cross never goes below the horizon. It'll just keep spinning around the South Celestial Pole. But if you're sailing and navigating, you have a night like this, you look for that guy in the sky, the Southern Cross. In Hawaiian, they call it neve. It's one word, neve. And if you find that guy, you'll never be lost.
So they call Southern Cross neve?
Neve, yeah.
What is
There's
neve?
A couple of other names. Like Hanaya Kamalama is another name. But neve is an older name.
What does it mean?
I'm not sure what it means besides the Southern Cross. Hanaya Kamalama means to be cared for by the moon. And I'm not sure why it was called that.
And then what about the Alpha Beta stars? What are their names again?
Kamelemua and Kamelehope.
And do you know what those names mean?
The first Maile and the second Maile. I'm not sure why they were called Maile. Maile is a plant in Hawaii. It's also the name of some girls. There was these Maile sisters who's kind of famous in a story. But there's five of them. So I'm not sure if it's related to the story or not. But those guys is Kamelemua, Kamelehope. Now a lot of our star names were recorded in our dictionary and the names written down. But we don't really know what those star names are, what stars they're applied to. And so even more so, like when we do know the star names and what star they're talking about, a lot of times the stories aren't associated with why those stars were named that way. Some of the stars we know because they're names of navigators, and those are the stars that the navigators used to come to Hawaii or to sail back to Tahiti. But most of them that we do know, we're not sure of the name. Similar to like the names of our islands, we're not sure why Kauai is named Kauai. We just know that's the name. Yeah, we're not sure why Hawaii is named Hawaii. We just know the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't know the story.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So there's the Southern Cross.
That's the Southern Cross. The best thing to see in the southern sky. Yeah, or even in the northern hemisphere where you can see it, it's really good. But what's advantageous for us in the northern hemisphere is we have the North Star, and there's no equivalent of the North Star in the southern hemisphere. So if you're above the equator in the northern hemisphere, the North Star will always be there, as long as you can see it through the clouds that pass through or through the sea spray if you're close to the equator. But the southern hemisphere, the south celestial pole, it just has this kind of ring of stars that rotate around the south celestial pole.
And so what are the other stars that are rotating around it?
So we got Kamailemua and Kamailehope, those two bright stars there. We got Neve up there. There's the False Cross, which is over there. It's called Vela in English. I think those names might be Greek. Sure. It's at the sail of the ship, but there's a False Cross over there. And we have Kili'i Kona'i Kalewa, which is Canopus in Greek, English. It's the brightest, that bright star over there. It's the second brightest star in the sky. To the right of that, there's Sirius, that really bright star out there. That's the brightest star in the sky. And then we have Kili'i Kona'i Kalewa, the second brightest star over there. And that rotates around the south celestial pole. And then if you see Canopus up there, Kili'i Kona'i Kalewa, right to the left and down, there's a little cloud looking thing. That's the Magellanic Cloud. There's two of them. I think Magellan was the first one to describe them, so they're named after him, Magellanic Clouds. And that one and the small one, it's hard to see here with all this other light from this town, but there's kind of a bright star out over there. And this other small Magellanic Cloud is right below it, and those two stars also rotate around the south celestial pole. And then there's a couple of other stars here that is hard to see right now. Yeah. So if you see those, if you see any of those stars, then you know, you can guess where south is. And if you know where south is, then you know where every other point is. So if you know if you're facing south, then north is behind you. You know if south's behind you, north's in front of you, and west is on your left, and east is on your right. As long as you know one point in the sky, you can tell where all the other points are. Just like our normal compass, it tells you just north. Based off of north, you know where all the other compasses are. Well, this is like our compass right here. It's all of these clues in the sky. It's just being able to read this compass, which is the hard part. And actually the easy part when it comes to navigation, being able to see stars like this on a beautiful night like this is an easy part of navigation. Nothing is really easy about navigation, but if you have a clear night like this, it makes it a lot easier. It's when there's complete cloud cover and you can't see stars, you can't see this compass that's above us, that makes it a lot more difficult.
Yeah, and so what do you do? I know we talked about it before, yeah. But let's say that if you don't mind.
Yeah, so then you use the star, you use the swells, and you use the wind. So we had to do kind of a lot of that on this last trip. I think it took us 11 days to get here from Aotearoa to here. And I think at least 3 of those days, maybe 4, was complete cloud cover where we couldn't see the sun, we couldn't see the moon, so we couldn't see the stars at all. And we use the swells, and we use the wind. So based off of the days where we could see the wind, that we could see the sun and the stars, we would notice that the swells came from a certain direction, and it didn't appear that the wind shifted. And because the swells are created far away, that we knew that just a locally generated storm wouldn't change the effect, the swells that we were using. So we would just use the swells and the wind and navigate that way. Yeah.
So have you ever gotten lost?
I mean, I've never... There's been times where I'm like, what direction are we going? But this was my first time navigating by myself. And Uncle Bruce was on board, and he's like the master. So there's been times where I wasn't totally clear of what direction we were going and how many miles. But he was there, and he knew, and I could talk to him and ask him questions. And so ask him, so just to be sure, this is our same swell we're using, and it's still in the right place. Like, yeah, that's the guy, that's the swell, we're doing good. And so for me, I haven't been in that position. I've been part of the navigation with another woman, Kaiulani Murphy, and we just recently sailed from Samoa to Tonga to Aotearoa, and the two of us was able to navigate. But we have beautiful weather too. And besides those two times, I haven't had other experiences where I was in charge of the navigation. So, you know, I haven't been in that position. And I think if there comes a time where you don't know what direction to head because of the clouds and the winds shifting and the swells aren't from a steady location, that they just close the sails and wait for an opportune time where they can see the sun and the stars and tell them what direction they're going. Don't want to be lost out there. Once you're lost and confused, and if you keep sailing in the wrong direction, you wouldn't be sure of where you are in that time and which direction you need to go. So if you're heading south, if your course is south and you end up going southeast, if you're sailing for, let's say, 100 miles and you don't know what direction you're heading, if you think you're still on your course and then you keep going south, you'll miss the islands that you're searching for, especially if we're going for aiming for small islands, which we normally are. You know, if you're sailing to Australia, it's a huge target, and there's pretty much zero chance that, unless you're totally way off, confused for weeks, you're going to find Australia. But if we're going from, say, Aotearoa to Lord Howe Island, which we just did, you know, if you're off just for a little bit, then you're going to sail right by the island and not even know it. So if you find yourself in that position, we end up just closing our sails and drifting through the night until we can be sure we know what direction we're headed. Be sure the swells that we're using are still coming out of the same direction, that which we can tell from the rising of the sun or the setting of the sun.
And are there other things? I've heard that there are other, like, indicators that you're getting near an island, like...
Yeah, yeah. Near island. So we have this expanded landfall that we use that... sometimes it's just what we see floating in the water. You know, if we see a lot of limu floating, or coconut fronds, or other natural debris, we know we're somewhat close. You normally don't see those hundreds of miles out to sea. And then we look for the manuoku, these white birds, these fairy terns. And those have to return to the land every day, every night. They don't stay out on the water like Eva, like frigate birds or albatross. They have to return. So if you see those islands, you know you're close. And then there's other birds like terns as well. And most of the time, the terns stay even closer to land than the knotty terns. They stay closer to land than the fairy terns, the manuoku. So as you're going, you look. You know, based off of your calculations and your speed and your direction of travel, that you're close to the island, or you're at least you're close to land. And when you start seeing those birds, they're affirmation that you are where you think you are and that you are close to land. And we saw those as we're sailing towards Lord Ho. We saw six Manu'oku birds, which told us we were close to the land. Sometimes you get a Manu'oku, one or two birds that fly far out, a couple of hundred miles out to sea, and they're kind of just the travelers, and I'm not sure why they do that, but they just go far by themselves, but they still have to return to land. But when you see clusters of birds, like six, like we just saw by Lord Howe, we know we're pretty close to the land. We're within 100 miles. And as we're traveling more and more, the next morning, we saw big flocks of birds that were diving on a pile of fish. And you normally don't see huge flocks, as we saw, far out to sea. They're normally close to the shore. Sometimes, like when you go to places where there are atolls, they're all close in the or within the lagoon, stay close to land. And so we saw that the next morning, and so we knew where land was really close to where we were. But those are some of the expanded landfalls, as we call them. Other clues we look for to see that we're close to land.
Yeah, and so what about, does the swell change at all outside an island?
Yeah, so swells would change. When we were sailing from Hawaii to Rangiroa in the Tuamotu Islands, there was a large swell that was coming to us from the south, southeast, I believe. And as we got closer, the swells died because they were being blocked by the land. So that was an indication that we're close to the land as well. When you're on the open ocean, it's pretty steady, these big oceanic swells, because they're created from storms far away, hundreds, thousands of miles away. And when you get to an area where they just stop, you know that they're stopping because they're being blocked by something, or they're changing their shape and they change the direction. So you know you're close to land. And same when we sailed from Tonga to Aotearoa, there was a big westerly swell. And when we got close to Aotearoa, we're in the lee of the island, that swell stopped. And we knew as we kept sailing, because of the wind angle, we had to go north of our reference course. We knew that when this swell picked up again from the west, that we are north of Aotearoa, and that those swells are coming to us through the Tasman Sea. But yeah, the direction of swells are affected by land that's in front of us, so we use that as well.
So I just have to scratch an itch real quick.
It's kind of warm up here.
Yeah, it's nice, huh? I wonder if, we see so many stars.
Yeah.
Do you memorize the names? How many names of stars do you know?
I'm not sure.
And what do you call, what's a Hawaiian name for the Milky Way? Is there a name?
We call it a i'a, a fish. The name of it is fish. And so we talk about hulika'i'a, we see that a lot. It means like the fish has turned. It's a reference to the Milky Way moving across the sky. I know in Samoa they call it alakea, which likely it could have been called that same in Hawaiian as well. We're lucky that in Polynesia that we have very similar languages and similar cultures, and there's some people in Samoa who's doing a lot of research on stars and star movements that us in Hawaii can benefit from their research and likely apply what they're learning to our own understanding of the way our ancestors viewed the stars as well. And similar for Tahitians and other islands in the South Pacific, that we're so closely related that it's likely a similar name that they're using that we once used. And same for us, and names that we use that perhaps they use as well. So right now we just call it the fish, hulika'i'a, the fish has turned, but alakea totally makes sense to be the name as well in Hawaiian, and it seems like that was a name they're using in Samoan. So the more you learn about other Pacific languages, the more you learn about your own language. You know, you see about origins of words and perhaps other definitions of what those words are based off of what they use those words for.
And so we're pretty far south, but are there many stars that you can see in this sky that you could also see in Hawaii?
Yeah, there's a lot of stars that we can see here. Just most of them that we can't is just centered around this south celestial pole because we're north that we don't see them, but we still see the Southern Cross and these other Kamailemua, Kamailehope, and these other bright stars. We don't see these Magellanic clouds. They're too far south for us to see, but all the stars north of this circle here around the South Celestial Pole, we see and more. So this big constellation here that looks like a hook facing the land is Scorpio to the Greeks, but we call that Kamakaunuia Maui. It's a big fish hook of Maui. Another name is Manaia Kalani. That was the name of Maui's fish hook. And so we see this in Hawaii and use these stars as well.
And so when I go to the Line Islands, have you been to the Line Islands?
I haven't. I've been to Palmyra, which I think is pretty close to Christmas Island.
Yeah.
But I haven't been to this other island.
And so tell me what stars I'm going to see when
you'll see all of the. You'll see these stars as well. It's just all of these stars to the north of the South Celestial Pole. So you'll see this guy here, Kamakaunuia Maui. And you'll see all these other guys. This bright star up here is Hikianalia. It's the name of one of our canoes. And this orange star here is Hokulea. So you can see the difference of the sky, whereas in Hawaii, Hokulea and Hikianalia, these two stars rise together. Where down here, we're so far south, Hikianalia rises way before Hokulea. So if you can just imagine this whole plane shifting south so that these two stars rise together, that's what it's like in Hawaii.
Okay, I'm going to just take a